Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. I will be joined by a very special guest in just a few moments here, but this is it. This is the final installment of our mock draft show. We decided to, do it before they did the draft, although I think we probably could have been a lot more accurate if we did it next Monday, but we have 8 more teams, 9 more picks. We are going to go through the team needs for every team in the NFL. So we are going to do some of these second round picks here. And with that, I want to bring in our special guest. Andy Benoit is back. And I want to ask you 2 questions before we get into the mock draft part, Andy. First of all, did you see who the twist ending is for this show? Do you see who the last team up is? The Shyamalanian twist.
Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd call that a twist ending, because we knew Buffalo was going to be last on our list because they're the last team to take a pick in this draft, correct?
Yeah. Now we can, we don't have to feel bad about carving out 45 minutes to talk about the Bills.
It's nice we're doing it at the end because I can take off then while you finish the show. And I can get out of here and go water my yard. My sprinkler guy hasn't come yet, so I got to water the yard when we're done here.
Oh, man. Before we jump into it, I do want to bring up one thing a little more seriously here. Not that any of this is serious. It's just it's draft foolishness here. But this Justin Herbert versus Tua debate that's going on here, and it sounds like across the NFL there are a lot of teams, possibly more than half, who like Herbert more than they like Tua. And now, obviously, Tua's not only his hip, but his overall injury history is playing into this. But I wanted to put a theory in front of you, Andy, and see what you think. I think Herbert is the more physically gifted human being. And I think for that reason, teams who have maybe an offensive head coach or maybe an offensive-minded decision maker might like the idea of bringing in Justin Herbert and trying to mold him in the, you know, myriad different ways that you can mold Justin Herbert and build an offense around him, as opposed to Tua, who's probably a little more limited to a quick strike type of offense. Although, you know, I would say Tua, injury stuff aside, certainly has a higher floor than Justin Herbert. And maybe if you are a defensive-minded coach, you're looking at Tua and just saying, like, you know, let's just get a guy who we know will be good, even if he's not great.
Well, I think we've seen Justin Herbert before in the NFL for many decades, at least 30, 40 years or so. We've seen that kind of pass. We're talking stylistically, which is really all we can say about these guys, in my opinion. Tua is, you know, Gary, if we had said 5 years ago, before we saw Baker Mayfield, before, you know, Russell Wilson's been pretty good for more than 5 years, but, you know, before Russell, let's say 10 years ago, there's a guy who is around 6 feet tall. He's fast, but he's not at all special fast. He's not going to outrun people in the NFL consistently. His arm is nothing special. He's a great guy, a great leader, a smart player, but small, not super fast, nothing special with his arm. Nobody would have ever thought about him being a top 5 round draft pick, let alone a high first round pick. The game has changed and the league has evolved, and so the scope of what we can have at quarterback has therefore expanded. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to overshadow or wedge out what we've always had at quarterback, which still works. The big, strong, big arm pocket passer type guy. And I think Herbert's probably a little bit more than that. You can tell me if I'm wrong there, but you know, I think Herbert's an easier projection to the NFL because we've seen it before. It's my guess of what's behind these conversations. Plus, Tua, you know, there are going to be teams that feel he has a major injury flag as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the injury stuff really complicates it. And frankly, if you took the injury stuff away, I think the consensus would be that I still think Tua would be slotted behind Burrow, but probably above Herbert at this point. But it's just interesting because it does sound, and you wouldn't have thought this would be the case 6 months ago or 9 months ago, it does sound like Herbert has probably a better than 50% chance of going above Tua when it's all said and done here.
Well, and one other thing to keep in mind is these guys, although I think when you have a guy who struggles with accuracy, consistency, which I've heard, I haven't watched a lot of Herbert, but I've heard he does kind of like a Josh Allen a little bit. I don't know if that changes with a guy once he gets into the NFL. So in that sense, you might have to understand he is what he is. He can make some tremendous throws. We just have to understand what type of throws are best. And in Josh Allen's case, I think it's intermediate type of throws, which means you want to be a run-first offense and push the ball downfield. You're not going to dink and dunk your way through it because the quarterback needs to be more consistent for that to work as an accuracy passer. So, what I'm getting at, though, is when Deshaun Watson came out, Gary, I didn't think he was an overly impressive passer coming out of Clemson. I know there were others who didn't think that either. And quite frankly, Watson has been better as a passer than I expected and other people expected in the NFL. He's looked like a better passer than he was at Clemson. So these guys are not finished products per se. And I don't think Watson has a big arm. I think it's stronger than it appears. He kind of has a weird throwing motion where the ball's a little bit up and away from him. So it looks like his arm's not as strong as it might be. It's not compact. Mm-hmm. But the point is he's a better thrower than he was coming into the NFL. So that also raises the question, are there teams that will think Tua can become a better thrower? They're never going to be mistaken for Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes, but can they become a little bit better? Drew Brees is another one who got better in terms of arm strength and proficiency after he got in the NFL. That can happen.
That's fair. Guys do change after they get into the league. But yeah, that's all. I just wanted to make sure we touched on the big quarterback debate before Thursday rolls around here. And now we are free to move into the mock draft portion of the show. We have three first-round picks to go. Like I said at the top, we have nine teams, nine picks. One team's a repeat from an earlier show. You can always go back and listen to the earlier shows. Andy, I have to rapid-fire these picks real quick. As we mentioned on the first three shows, we are not projecting trades in this one. So, trade up, trade down, we're not doing that. We are mostly leaning on team needs. Not exclusively. We're bending that a little bit, but let me run through real quick who went here. 1 through 29 is what we're through so far. We had Cincinnati takes Joe Burrow, LSU quarterback. Washington, Chase Young, the Ohio State edge defender. Detroit takes Jeffrey Okuda, the Ohio State corner. With the fourth pick, the Giants take Jedrick Wills, the Alabama offensive tackle. Miami takes Mekhi Becton, Louisville offensive tackle. The Chargers take Isaiah Simmons, Clemson linebacker / safety. Carolina takes Tristan Wirfs, Iowa offensive lineman. Eighth, we have Arizona takes Kalavon Chasen, LSU edge guy. Jacksonville takes Jerry Jeudy, Alabama receiver. Cleveland takes Andrew Thomas, Georgia offensive tackle. The Jets take Henry Ruggs, the third Alabama receiver. We are now at 12. That's Las Vegas takes CeeDee Lamb, Oklahoma receiver. San Francisco takes a falling Derek Brown, Auburn defensive tackle. Tampa Bay takes Austin Jackson, USC offensive tackle. Denver takes Justin Jefferson, LSU receiver. 16, this is Atlanta takes C.J. Henderson, the Florida corner. Dallas takes Jalen Johnson, the Utah corner. Miami, this is where we had Tua going, the Alabama quarterback. 19 is Las Vegas. That's Christian Fulton, LSU cornerback. Jacksonville at 20 takes Yetur Gross-Matos, Penn State edge. 21, Philadelphia takes Patrick Queen, LSU linebacker. 22, Minnesota takes T. Higgins, Clemson receiver. New England takes A.J. Epinesa, Iowa edge guy. 24, the Saints take Javon Kinlaw, South Carolina defensive tackle. Minnesota takes A.J. Terrell, Clemson cornerback. 26, Miami takes Zach Bond, Wisconsin linebacker. 27, Isaiah Wilson, Georgia offensive tackle. 28, Baltimore takes Oklahoma linebacker Kenneth Murray. And 29, the Titans take Ezra Cleveland, Boise State offensive tackle. That brings us to the Green Bay Packers. Andy, what do the Packers need?
Was that worth it, by the way? That's a long list of guys you just read off there. I didn't know it would take so long.
It was, but it's draft week, and if people are just jumping into the draft shows now, I just want to make sure they're up to speed here, and that's just the way it goes. We need the Micro Machines guy to run through it.
You're looking after the listeners. That's good. Green Bay, they don't have a lot of pressing needs, which is not uncommon for a team coming off of an NFC Championship appearance. Could find a replacement at tight end for Jimmy Graham. My guess is they feel Jay Sternberger can be that guy. They're different types of players a little bit, but Sternberger, who I think was their third round pick last year, he's more of a receiving tight end, so they probably feel okay there. But if there's a tight end they love, and I think all the tight ends are still on the board, Gary, mm-hmm. right? We haven't given anyone a tight end.
That is correct.
So that's a possibility. And Matt LaFleur did do some three tight end formations last year, and Mercedes Lewis is a little bit older. They just brought him back, but they could be looking to build some depth there as well. So that's one position. Defensively, the only spot that really stands out as an immediate need would be slot cornerback, because Tremont Williams is, at this point, he's not back. Now, he could be one of those guys that gets signed a couple weeks before the season starts and they're fine with it and they go along. But if they don't want to do that, if they want to, you know, at some point you need to find a replacement anyway. Tremont Williams is almost your age, Gary. So there could be a slot corner that they like right there. They're very versatile with some of their other DBs and Chandon Sullivan, Josh Jackson. But I don't know if either of those guys are pure slot corners.
All right. Well, Jeff Gladney, the TCU guy. By the way, I didn't appreciate that little knock on my age there. I'm still doing all right. I can move okay. Jeff Gladney, the TCU corner, is on the board here. Like I said, it's all the tight ends. I mean, look, I think Jay Sternberger is better than the tight ends in this class. I think maybe you could argue Cole Kmet, because he's a little bit more of a traditional wide tight end type of guy. But, you know, I'd take Sternberger over all these guys if I were the Packers. But maybe that's just me. Cole Kmet, I guess you could say, is in the conversation. But as far as slot guys go, Gladney can play inside, play outside. Other than that, it's like the safeties you're looking at. I guess we got Xavier McKinney still on the board. If you were looking for a guy, you could sort of play, play a little box safety, cover the slot, play a little dime linebacker. I don't know who you'd like between him and Gladney, who's a little more of a, I think you look at the body type and say slot guy. But, he's one of those guys who's long arm for his size, and he's a feisty physical guy, so he could probably play the boundary at times as well.
Sure. By the way, real quick, because I have looked at these players, all of them now. When I look at them, I just say I've watched them for a few minutes just to see the feel of them. I haven't studied them on film. But when I looked at Cole Kmet, I thought right away, oh, I get it. He's every tight end I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, he is central casting, insert tight end. He just looks that part.
Mm-hmm.
As far as defensive backs, because they're, I like your idea about the Alabama safety, but because of Darnell Savage, who's going to be looks like he's going to be a pretty good player for them, a first round pick last year, and then Adrian Amos, big free agent signing. He's not old, but he's not young. You know, he's right in the middle of his career. They feel secure, and actually Amos is only 26, so they feel secure at that position for the next several years. So then the question is, would they feel that Xavier McKinney can play the slot on a regular basis? Because we know he can drop down into the slot at times, but they need someone who will play the slot snap after snap, because those other two guys, Savage and Amos, are both, they're versatile safeties, but they're entrenched at safety. They're not ever going to moonlight at cornerback.
Okay. So I feel like we're leaning Gladney here with this pick, more of the pure slot guy here. So.
And he can play man coverage. Okay, I assume he can if he's a first-round corner projection. So, yeah, because that's a big deal in Green Bay's system. Even when they play zone, it usually has a ton of man principles. You have to be able to match up if you're going to play defensive back for Mike Pettine.
All right, Jeff Gladney, TCU cornerback to Green Bay. And now we have our only repeat of the show, so we won't go too deep into their needs. But San Francisco, we gave them a defensive tackle, Derek Brown, with the 13th pick. Like we said, they are going to almost certainly trade down at one of these spots because they're so lacking in picks. I think they have nothing until round 5 after this pick. So expect to trade down, but we are not trading down. So at 31, after taking a defensive tackle, who are we looking at here for the Niners?
Well, they need a defensive back themselves, so I don't think they would trade up because of what you just said. They probably couldn't if they wanted to, but it would be hard to sit there and watch teams like Green Bay and Minnesota, who didn't pick too far back here. You know, the corners are going to be coming off the board, and if San Francisco has taken a defensive tackle early on, which I think they will, because defensive tackle, Gary, is a proactive position. You don't have to wait for someone to throw the ball near you. You don't have to wait to get the ball thrown to you like you're a wide receiver. You can go after them. So the more dynamic athletes, the destructive players, I think the Niners are more inclined to go for those guys early on because they're not dependent on anything else. They're sure things, so to speak. With their second first round pick, they need to start filling holes, and the holes on their roster will be cornerback, because pretty much everybody except for Jimmy Ward, who's a safety slash corner, more of a safety, everybody I think is due to be a free agent next year. So even if they like their secondary now, which they do, but they could use a number two corner right now anyway. Even if they didn't feel that way, even if they loved everybody, they still need to find replacements because they're not going to be able to re-sign all of these guys.
All right. Trayvon Diggs, the Alabama cornerback, Stephon's little brother here, he certainly fits the mold of a, you know, sort of long Seattle-style corner as well for this defense, and he will be likely available in this area in the late first. So of the remaining guys, he definitely fits that mold the best. There are a couple of sort of interesting longer guys, as there usually are. We talk about this sometimes, the fact that when you are looking for those Seattle-style corners, they're a little bit different than what everyone else is looking for, and therefore you might be able to wait a little bit to take one. But I think for the purpose of this exercise here, I think Trayvon Diggs is probably the guy we'd want to slot in here.
One concern I would pose with that is Emmanuel Mosley is a free agent next year, but he's a restricted free agent, so they're going to have mm-hmm. him back. So we're talking about, and Mosley, if he plays next year, this upcoming season in 2020, like he did late in 2019, he's an entrenched, sure thing starter, because I thought he was very good for them. So we're talking about a potential replacement for Richard Sherman, who's still in his early 30s, by the way. It's not like Sherman's 45 years old, and he's already shown he can come off the injuries. So they might want Sherman back too, Gary, for a couple more years. I'm not so sure they don't need a slot corner more than a perimeter corner in that case. Yeah, and Diggs from Alabama, as I understand, I don't think he's not a slide in the slot kind of guy, is he?
He is not. He is not. If you're looking for inside outside guys, I think looking at the board, you're probably looking at Damon Arnett of Ohio State is the best guy left.
And maybe they just take the value, because I imagine Diggs is a lot higher on a lot of teams' boards than Arnett would be.
Yeah.
Maybe they just take the value there. The other thing to consider, if there's a safety that they really like, and I would think it'd need to be a free safety, because Jaquiski Tartt's more, he can play either way, but he's more of a strong safety, they could move Jimmy Ward back to the slot and then have a new free safety. And I think that would be viable for him, because Ward has shown he can play man coverage in the slot, and a lot of the times the Niners play zone coverage anyway. And Ward's a little bit more of a physical slot corner in terms of his body type than other guys would be, and that can mean something if you want to play the run against three receiver sets, which you would if you're the Niners, because you're facing the Cardinals and Rams twice a year, and those teams very often have three receivers on the field. Seattle does too, actually. So a run defending slot guy could be viable. Maybe they might have that in Ward. Is there a safety on the board that they might love?
So the two guys I'd give you, who I you know sort of classify as single high type of guys, and I do think they're both in the round one conversation, even if they both slip to day two. Ashton Davis from Cal, who's a little bit more of an athlete at this point, a little more projectable, maybe a year or two away before you're comfortable with him out there. The other guy is Grant Delpit, who LSU safety, everyone thought he was, you know, a first round lock, probably top half of the first round type of guy coming into the year. He had a rough junior year. I mean, they won the national championship, but he had a rough junior year, really inconsistent as a tackler. But a lot of people think it might have had to do with a lot of injuries that he played through. And obviously, we've seen guys over the years sort of, sort of tap out when they have injuries in their final collegiate season. He did not, because they were in the national title hunt. For that reason, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, look at the look at the sophomore tape in production, and that's a different player. But I think those are the two guys you're probably looking at this point. The guy who might be a year away, or the guy who is a little bit more risk reward based on what you saw on the tape last season.
Well, recent history says that few teams, if any, have been as willing to gamble on those risk reward guys, especially if injury is involved, the way the Niners gamble. They've taken other, remember, Lattimore at running back, Reuben Foster at linebacker. Now, those gambles have not worked out largely, so maybe John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan feel differently about it, but, you know, I don't know if they would probably, even though tackling is important in every scheme, it's especially important in a straightforward Seahawks-style scheme like Robert Saleh's on defense there in San Fran, that the brass for the 49ers has shown they might be willing to look past a one-year issue of tackling if it's like what you said, where he was playing through some injuries.
Or do you, I mean, do you want McKinney and sort of keep the safety alignment the same, or are you now just duplicating what you have in Jimmy Ward at this point and two guys who, you know, are probably primarily safeties who you're kind of, I don't know, shoving into a spot that maybe they shouldn't be in?
No, I would be fine with that as long as you feel McKinney can play what they call the post safety, the deep center field position, the Ed Reed position, free safety. If you feel he can do that, then that would actually give you a lot of unique little versatility with Ward and McKinney there, and you could do some really good stuff with subtle disguises. That'd be very valuable for them. I was forgetting about McKinney because we just talked about him. If he's on the board, as long can he play free safety? I mean, he's not just a strong safety, is he?
No, I mean he can. I think if you're looking at him, you like him closer to the line of scrimmage. You like him as sort of that dime linebacker type of guy, that guy you can play over the slot. Yes, you could put him in that role, but you're probably better leaning the other way with him. Does that make sense?
Sure. Well, and Ward can still play free safety. So then the question is, can McKinney play slot corner foolish time? And maybe we just went over that with Green Bay, and that's not what he is. But Green Bay would ask McKinney to play man-to-man out of the slot, and the Niners more often would ask him to play zone. So it's a totally different demand on the skill set.
I do like him playing zone out of the slot. That makes me feel better about him here.
I can tell you this. They're for sure going to trade down because none of these conversation has a lot of just little glitches in it that make the picks not clean. Unless one of these other guys that we don't expect is on the board still. I'll let you make the – you know what we want, Gary. It's pretty clear. I'll let you make the pick from here then.
Let's say schematically, let's do McKinney. And, you know, he'll be the guy who kind of comes down. You can keep Ward at the more traditional safety spot. And McKinney's the guy who's going to come down and play over the slot. And I think he's good playing that sort of zone look out of the slot. I think that's a strength for him. So I think it's a fit. I think Xavier McKinney is maybe not the cleanest fit that we found, but I think he's a fit here in San Francisco with the 31st pick, which brings us to Kansas City, the last pick of the first round, defending Super Bowl champs. What do they need, Andy?
Yeah, and by the way, just real quick on the Niners as well, so the Niner fans aren't saying we're disrespecting them or anything. Their slot guy this year, Kaywan Williams, who's in a contract year, he is an excellent player. So it's entirely possible they'll want to re-sign him anyway and prioritize him. Just covering that up, but I don't think they'll be able to sign every DB that they have right now. They're going to have to replace some. The Chiefs, as far as what the Kansas City Chiefs need, you know, what's interesting with their offense, Gary, it's so superstar laden because of Mahomes, because of Kelsey, because of Tyreek Hill. You have the best QB in the NFL, and you have the two probably most dynamic pieces at their respective positions. Fastest wide receiver, most athletic all-around tight end. When you have that kind of firepower, the guys around them get naturally elevated. So I don't know if you need to have a ton of talent. You don't need to invest in a ton of talent on offense because, let's just put it in kind of these weird layman's terms, it's not this, but a sixth-round pick might play as well as a third or fourth-round pick if he's surrounded by those guys in that offense.
Yeah.
So I would expect the Chiefs to really, and they don't have a lot of immediate needs on offense this year anyway. They need a number two tight end at some point, but I would expect them to focus on defense. The guy who got away this year, they recently brought back Bashaud Breeland, who had a nice second half of this. He had a nice season overall, in fact. So they're sound at corner again, because Charvarius Ward's outstanding on the other side. But the guy that got away that nobody made a big deal about was Kendall Fuller, who came back in the second half of this year. He'd missed some time with an injury, missed about half the season in the middle of the season with an injury. When he came back, that defense really took the next step because Fuller could do everything Tyrann Mathieu did. Wasn't quite as dynamic as Mathieu, but that interchangeability that we just talked about with the Niners and how important it was for them, that's really what made Kansas City's defense go in the second half of this season. And Mathieu was their most valuable player for that reason. So if they could find another guy like Mathieu, is our guy, who did you, you just put Woods off the board, didn't you? Just went to the Niners.
Yeah, McKinney just went to the
Xavier Woods of Dallas. Xavier McKinney. I have a feeling I'm going to mix up Xavier Woods.
A lot of Xaviers.
Yeah, because they're both safeties that sometimes play the slot, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of guy, Xavier McKinney, would be perfect for Kansas City. I think they need to replace Kendall Fuller at some point. They need a versatile safety that will allow Matthew to continue to be as versatile as possible. The other thing they could use is an edge rusher because Terrell Suggs has not been re-signed. They really only have one great edge rusher in Frank Clark.
Okay. I don't know about the edge guys here. We've talked about this throughout the series.
Yep.
Certainly in round one. I think some of these guys are interesting day two selections. Let's talk about the safeties, though. I mean, look, McKinney was the guy who fits best here with what the Chiefs need. And I didn't mention these other two guys because you would not take either of them or McKinney. But Terrell Burgess from Utah and Antoine Winfield Jr. out of Minnesota. Both of them, Burgess played cornerback until last year. Winfield, I think, might even, you know, if we're saying McKinney's 60% safety, 40% corner, I think Winfield might be closer to a 50-50 type of split here as far as what you can do with them. But I think both those guys pretty similar and fit pretty well with what you're looking for. Burgess a little bit bigger than Winfield. Winfield might be the better all-around athlete.
I would trust your judgment from there.
Winfield feels a little bit more like Kendall Fuller to me. So let's plug Antoine Winfield Jr. in there. And plus, it's always fun to have Antoine Winfield to the NFL. So
yeah, it is, because his dad, and this is a great way to be bad at your job if you're a GM, but it's hard to overcome. His dad was such a good tackler for such a long time. It's hard to separate father and son in your mind, yeah, when they have the same name. I just picture Antoine Winfield tackling everybody because that's what his dad did for 10 years.
Yep. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense here. We'll give him Antoine Winfield Jr. with the last pick of the first round. So we are not doing the full second round. However, we are doing the six teams who do not have first-round picks, or at least are not scheduled for first-round picks right now. And we will just sort of jump around the draft order here. And Andy always loves when I assign random guys to these teams.
Yeah. I used to get really frustrated with that. I've grown up now. I can tolerate it a little bit more. But that's right. You're going to pick some guy that we may or may not know even exists at this point. Yeah.
I will say, we used to, I mean, the Rams a couple years ago didn't have a pick till like 81 or something like that. So at least all these teams are in the top. We go down to 54 here at Buffalo. But the first team here is Indianapolis at 34. So basically, day two pick, but second pick of the second round. What do the Colts need?
The Colts, I think they need another defensive lineman. It has to be a pure pass rusher, though. And I know you've said we've already gone over not a lot of pass rusher options. You know, corner was a need, but they've kind of patched it up a little bit. They signed TJ Carey. He'll make your roster, and he'll play half the snaps and be adequate. Xavier Rhodes they signed. That's a boom or bust acquisition, but he fits their profile. They like long-arm corners there in Indianapolis. And I think they like Marvell Tell, their fifth-round pick a year ago. They have reason to be optimistic about him. So they're probably a little better at corner than they were a few months ago. Defensive lineman then becomes a need. And it's almost a luxury pick, Gary, because they do have Justin Houston and Kamiko Ture, and they drafted Ben Banagu last year. So Ture and Banagu have been second-round picks. Tyquan Lewis, he's an interior rusher, but he was a second-round pick. They just added DeForest Buckner. They do have a lot more pass rushing firepower than they did, but looking at the rest of their roster, I think that's still the spot that needs help the most. There's number two tight end would be the other one, I guess, as I look on offense. And maybe that's the way they lean, given that they've shown they're willing to draft pass rushers a little bit later. Second round guys, this is a high first round pick we're going over. Maybe they go with the let's say they take the best tight end on the board. Let's do that to balance this out a little bit. I do think they need a pass rusher at some point.
Okay. Do you want to give him Komet the tight end guy, or do you want more of a dynamic filling in for what Eric Ebron was?
I'd do that one because Jack Doyle is so good as a do everything tight end, and he can play attached to the line of scrimmage, and he's good as an H-back where he's kind of going in motion. In that case, a receiving tight end would probably be the way they lean there.
All right, let's I think one of the Bryants here, and I'll probably lean Harrison Bryant, the Florida Atlantic tight end, as opposed to Hunter Bryant. I do think Harrison's a little bit more of a complete player, but On top of that, Hunter Bryant comes with, I think Hunter Bryant's a lot like Jordan Reed, but that extends all the way to the injury history. So, let's go Harrison Bryant here, Florida Atlantic tight end to the Colts with the 34th pick. And that brings us to Houston at 40. They'll probably offer this pick back to the Texans for DeAndre Hopkins. But if that trade does not come to fruition, what are the Texans looking for?
They could use a replacement for DJ Reader for one, and that guy will come in house a little bit in Brandon Dunn, but Brandon Dunn played a lot of meaningful snaps for them last year as well, so they're still going to need a replacement there. Now it'll just be for Brandon Dunn. They need a big defensive tackle. Their linebacker, their best linebacker, is Zach Cunningham by far. And he's a longer bodied, sinewy kind of stalking guy. He's someone you want to keep bodies off of him because he eats up a lot of ground. He is a ferocious run defender when he is clean and has space. When he's in traffic, you know, he's probably a little bit of a different player. So someone to keep the bodies off of Zach Cunningham, another big defensive lineman. The other thing they could do, ideally you find somebody that has some pass rushing juice with them, because when J.J. Watt was out of the lineup last year, Gary, they had absolutely no pass rush at all in Houston. It was inevitable that they were going to lose in the playoffs if Watt wasn't there. And obviously Watt came back, but you know, it was still an issue in the playoffs. Their pass rush is not good enough right now, so they need some firepower up front.
I really like, I know this is partially because he originally played at Texas, which naturally, because I'm lazy, sort of links me back to the Texans. But Jordan Elliott, the Missouri defensive tackle, who I think he brings some scheme versatility. I think you can, you can ask him to sort of occupy blockers. He can get upfield a little bit if you need him to. I like Jordan Elliott here. I projected this in my silly mock draft on the website, and I still like it here at this point.
All right. That's a good one.
Chicago Bears at 43.
Couple of holes in the secondary now with your guy Artie Burns. Looks like he's penciled in right now at the right corner spot where Prince Amukamara used to play. So you need a replacement for Artie Burns because he couldn't get on the field in Pittsburgh. And some depth at safety. I bet they feel okay about Deion Bush stepping into the starting lineup now with Clinton Dix gone after 1 year. But if they loved Bush, then he would have stepped into the starting lineup last year. He was a fourth-round pick in 2016, so he's a vested veteran at this point. So they need either a safety or a cornerback, and they're in a scheme that demands a lot of man coverage as well under Chuck Pagano.
Yeah, I think, and we mentioned him somewhere in that late first round. I really should remember it because it was only like 10 minutes ago. But Damon Arnette, the Ohio State guy, and again, he's another guy, if you're looking for someone who has sort of inside-outside flexibility, that's Arnette. The other guys, I think Arnette is probably kind of ready to go right now. Looking at the other names who are available in that area, Noah Igbinoghene, I believe I pronounced that correctly, although I probably did not. The Auburn corner, he's more of a track star. He's a former receiver. He's still learning the position. He's a guy who might need a sort of unofficial redshirt type of year. I don't know if that's what the Bears really need, considering the roster they have built and the window they have right now. So I would lean Arnette here, the Ohio State corner.
All right.
That brings us to, at 49, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I think it's a little bit easy here. Javon Hargrave was a great player for them, or at least a very good player, and did a lot as their nose shade defensive tackle. Was much more than just a body plugger type in there. He could really move well. They built a lot around him and his movement skills and how they scheme their pass rush. And now he's a Philadelphia Eagle. And they traded for Chris Wormley from Baltimore. That's just acquiring depth. Wormley would not be dealt within the division if the Ravens, who knew him best, if they saw him as a high-level starter or even a starter in general. He's just more of a rotational guy. So they need a new Javon Hargrave, who was a third-round pick for them, which is a reminder. You can get good players throughout the draft. It's not just a first-round endeavor. But Hargrave, and if there's nobody that justifies mid-second round or wherever Pittsburgh's picking, there will be wide receivers on the board, and I do think the Steelers need help there, even with Deontay Johnson having come along a little bit late last year, third-round pick in 2019. And speedster James Washington showed glimmers of hope. That's not enough, though. Hope and glimmers and coming along a little bit. You're a Super Bowl ready-made team right now. Ben Roethlisberger's almost your age again, Gary. So they have to go all in right now. They need a wide receiver opposite Smith-Schuster because their scheme, it asks wide receivers to get open one-on-one. So either best receiver on the board or best defensive tackle on the board.
I would, let's see, I'm looking at the defensive tackles. I hate to look at guys who come to mind as more traditional nose guys, considering that was not Javon Hargrave, but they
would have a place for that kind of guy too, though. Hargrave may have been a bonus. You'd rather have Hargrave because of the dimension and what he gave you, but the Steelers are not going to pass up a big body guy if they like one.
Yeah, I had circled Devon Hamilton of Ohio State as a third-round possibility for them. As far as receivers go, I think Bryan Edwards from South Carolina, who's probably going to be on the board in this area. If you're looking for guys who can win one-on-one, I think Michael Pittman Jr. would be good for them as a complimentary guy. I don't think he'll make it down to 49. I think he'll be in the top 40 here. So, and the rest of the guys are... I don't know. The receiving class is interesting, not only because it's so deep, but there are so many guys who are sort of non-traditional, almost gadgety-looking guys. A lot of guys who you probably look at and see like Debo Samuel type of dudes. And I don't know. I don't know where these guys fit. I don't know how teams feel about them. But where the Steelers are, I think Bryan Edwards, the South Carolina receiver, makes a lot of sense here for them. And that's all I have to say about that, Andy. They'll wait until round three to scoop up Devon Hamilton from Ohio State to fill in that nose tackle.
All right. By the way, Michael Pittman Jr., his dad was a good player in the NFL for a while there.
Yeah.
His dad, I remember being the most muscular, and he was actually 6 feet tall, which is tall for a back, but he was so muscular, he looked almost stocky. And Michael Pittman Jr., looks like Michael Floyd. He's kind of a longer body guy, long arms. It's just interesting. He's 6'4". His dad was only 6 foot.
Yeah, that is pretty wild. Huh.
That's almost like, remember the Babineau brothers, Jonathan Babineau and Jordan Babineau?
Yep.
Jonathan was a defensive tackle and Jordan was a defensive back. You know, every once in a while you get relatives. And those guys are close in age. So that's probably a little bit more unusual than Michael Pittman Jr. being 4 inches taller and a longer body than his dad. But it's always interesting when there are brothers who don't quite look like brother. Travis Kelce and Jason, you could argue.
Yeah.
One's a lineman and one's a tight end. But anyway, Michael Pittman Jr. is a longer body guy, and you don't think he'll be here when we're picking, though.
No, I don't. But you know where you can find Michael Pittman Jr.? At some point on Monday, Sports Illustrated will have a piece on Michael Pittman Jr., which should be good. I haven't seen it yet, but Alex Pruitt wrote it, so I assume it's good because he does good things. Pick 52. We got two to go. This is the Los Angeles Rams on the clock for the first time at 52. Boy, lots of bodies going out there for the Rams. What do they need now, Andy?
The most glaring need is at linebacker. They just don't have anybody on the roster with any kind of experience. We're talking stack backer. So Leonard Floyd's not going to – that does not fill the position. He's an edge guy. You can call him what you want, but he's an edge guy. They need a stack linebacker. And Brandon Staley, their new defensive coordinator, he runs that Vic Fangio scheme. And that scheme's really predicated on having quality safeties and linebackers, smart – really, it's smart, sound, alert type of players, guys that can subtly play matchup zone and tweak their stuff and tweak their looks. You need bodies, quality bodies to do that. They just don't have the guys to do that right now. So they might be running a scheme a little bit different than what Staley was initially hired for. It might be a bit of an evolution process there. But you want to get going in that direction. You got, even if you don't want to run the Fangio type of scheme, you still need a linebacker. You still got to play with that guy. The other thing to consider, Gary, is the Rams are willing to go with dime defensive personnel so that one of their safeties can be linebacker for them in most passing downs and even second down situations. Taylor Rapp was that guy last year, second rounder out of Washington. Mm-hmm. He was really good at it. He looks like a high-quality hybrid safety-type linebacker. So to fill their linebacker need, they could take a really good safety that they like, because Rapp and John Johnson, they can both come down and play in the box and do some of those linebacker demands. Even then, they have to draft a linebacker at some point, even if they go safety first. So they need two linebackers.
Yeah, I was going to say that the two, it's funny, these guys are both small school guys. You got Kyle Duggar from Lenoir Ryan and Jeremy Chin from Southern Illinois. Those guys are safeties. They probably, those are your guys who are going to come down and play some linebacker at that point. But, obviously the Rams are in a win now type of period. Do they want to bring in developmental guys when really they need to bring in someone who they can rely on immediately? What's really interesting about this linebacker class to me is once you get to the second tier, and I think there's a pretty steep drop off after the top two, that's Patrick Queen and Kenneth Murray, but you get to the second tier, you got some good players. I think a lot of these guys will be longtime NFL players, a lot of them starters, but a lot of them are not guys you want on the field in passing situations. And if they are on the field in passing situations, you want them blitzing as opposed to trying to cover. The one exception I'd say is Troy Dye from Oregon, it's Oregon, I've been told. And mm-hmm. the issue with him is it's almost like he probably should be a safety. Productive tackler at Oregon, but he's a guy you look at and he's almost like a purely a cover guy. And he, I don't know, maybe he's the, I know it's a new scheme now, but maybe he's the closest guy to a Cordy Littleton type. When you're looking at this linebacker class, but there's really, it's almost like you just got to pick your poison here if you're the Rams. Do you want the sort of steady early down guy, or do you go with the maybe not so steady on early downs coverage specialist?
I have a tough time envisioning that staff being overly thrilled with a guy who can't cover at linebacker, especially if we're taking him relatively early in the draft. So I don't think you can take a linebacker in today's NFL before I don't think you can take one in rounds 1, 2, 3, or 4 if you don't think he can be a solid cover guy for you.
All right, let's pencil in Troy Dye here. Maybe they see something in one of these other guys, Malik Harrison or out of Ohio State, or Logan Wilson out of Wyoming, one of these guys. Maybe they think they have some unlocked potential in coverage here. But I think Dye is the guy who's going to have to be in there when teams throw the ball, which, as everyone knows, is most of the time these days.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to the best part of the show, and that's the Buffalo Bills. And boy, every day I love that Stephon Diggs trade even more. So no Bills fan should be bummed out that they are not picking till 54, but the Bills are on the clock. What do they need, Andy? And really, do they need anything?
Yeah, I agree with you on the Stephon Diggs trade. That does a lot for their offense. It kind of locks every other receiver into position for them as well. It's a much more complete offense on paper than it was now, and it's an offense devoid of any holes. It's not the best offense in the NFL, but they don't have any weaknesses at all to address, or at least not with the starting unit, and really not with the top backups either. So it goes to the defense. Defensive end, Mario Addison's on the wrong side of 30, so is Jerry Hughes. They can both play and probably play at a high enough level for you this year, but you're going to need to replace one, if not both of them, in the near future. And it wouldn't be bad to have them on a rotational basis anyway. So I would probably say defensive end, corner if they love one. Josh Norman's not a bad option, but you still want a corner if you love one. And with that, Gary, I'm going to go ahead and take off and let you finish up the show from here. I appreciate you having me on. It's always fun doing this with you.
He's still here. He wouldn't leave. He wouldn't leave for this part. I've been giving them Alton Robinson, the Syracuse edge guy, in mock drafts here. The other names I'll just put out there, and these are all sort of smaller speed guys. I love Daryl Taylor from Tennessee and Julian Aquara from Notre Dame, whose brother Romeo has been in the NFL. Different body type. He's an edge guy. Really battled injuries at Notre Dame, but sort of a high risk, high reward type of pick in this area. But I'll give him Robinson because I feel like I have to have some sort of solidarity with a fellow Syracuse guy, and you know, it just sort of makes me happy. Someone from Syracuse staying in Buffalo.
No, that wasn't too bad.
It wasn't. There's just not a whole lot to you know, sort of figure out with the Bills at this point. The mystery is gone.
Yeah. I have a question I want to ask you about Buffalo, but I can't. I don't want to ask because I'm afraid it's going to lead into, you know, I'm going to have to sit here for 15 minutes and hear it.
Yep.
When have you? How many times have you been to Buffalo? I know you and I went together once because we were at the Bills facility, and I remember when Mario Williams walked into the room, you got visibly intimidated by him. Do you remember that?
Wasn't Mario? Was he still there? I don't remember.
Yeah,
Mario Williams.
It was,
but...
Mario. He came in to retrieve a backpack that he'd left behind. We were in the film room. We were set up in the film room for something with LaShawn McCoy.
LaShawn McCoy. Yes.
But I thought you looked intimidated by him.
Well, that's kind of the stance you have to take when you're around Mario Williams. I wasn't going to fight him. I wasn't going to puff my chest out.
So that was, I know you've been to Buffalo once, but have you been there that many times?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good. Wow, thanks.
No, I used to, starting like my senior year in college, I used to go up there once a year for a game. At least, and that streak stayed intact until I joined the MMQB and ended up having stuff to do on Sundays. But I was up there every year for 10 years, 12 years, something like that.
What was the best Bills game you ever attended?
Oh, man. They lost a lot of them. They lost a lot of them in heartbreaking fashion.
Wait, so you went to the Super Bowls.
Yeah. No, I'm not that old. This is all in the 2000s. This was, yeah. I saw a lot of Trent Edwards games, a little bit of JP Lossman. Yeah, they weren't grand days, but
JP Lossman was the first time I ever saw a quarterback after a game after a loss. They lost to the Jets. It was the Brett Favre Jets. Favre had I think he had a run that was over 30 yards in the game, some kind of trick play where he kept the ball kind of thing. I think that's what it was. He may have caught a pass. It was something weird, but the Jets won a game that they should have won, but really the Bills should have won it once they started playing. The Bills outplayed them. And anyway, Lossman looked, you talk about being intimidated by a Buffalo Bill. Lossman looked on another planet and distraught coming into the locker room there.
Yeah, it's J.P. Lossman was, and this is when I knew I'd never be a NFL general manager, I was sure J.P. Lossman was going to be a star, and my theory was his team around him was so bad at Tulane, I was always just kind of like, boy, whoever takes him, and this was before he was a Bill, I was like, whoever takes him, once he gets like actual real-life talent around him, he's just going to take off, he's going to be unstoppable, and it almost came together. Not quite, though.
Not quite. So what was the best Bills game you saw then?
I'm not going to tell you the best game because honestly, I really can't remember a game that was particularly good that I was at. I always had a wonderful time up there, but the games weren't good. I was at, and this was in, I want to make sure I get the year right. This is 2009. This is when T.O. was on the Bills. They lost to the Browns 6-3. And that was the game that a lot of people have considered the worst game ever played. What was it? Derek Anderson. Let me pull the box score. Derek Anderson, I think, had two completions. Yes, Derek Anderson was
two for
17 for 23 yards. It was each team punting, and the punts, it was so windy that day. That's why it was such a disaster. That and the teams weren't very good. But it was so windy that day that the punts were just an absolute adventure. So it did add some drama with the punting. But other than that, it was just no one went anywhere. Trent Edwards threw for 152 yards. Not bad.
No, not bad.
Marshawn Lynch and T.O. were on that Bills team.
Wow, and that was before Lynch became a household name. Mm-hmm. People forget he was in Buffalo. He started his career there. Mike, I have a bad Bills game real quick then, because see, I'm making it go this whole 15 on the Bills. The first time I missed Monday Night Football as a kid, by choice, I'm sure I lost it here or there for, I know I missed a Cowboys-Saints game because I got in trouble one day on that one. But by choice, the first time I missed a game was October 21st, 1997. The Washington Wizards came to our town and played the Denver Nuggets in a preseason NBA game. And we couldn't believe it. Rod Strickland was in the house, a point guard for the Wizards.
Where did did they play at Boise State?
It was at the Idaho Center, which is in a couple towns over. They used to play at Boise State. The year before that, the Lakers and Sonics had played, and both teams, that was at Boise State. My dad bought scalper tickets. I watched him bid on them down. We got like seventh row from the court. It was the greatest night of my life at that point in my world. But both of those teams that night had agreed that we're treating this like our regular season tune-up game. So Gary Payton got thrown out in the first quarter for two technicals, but he would have played the whole game. Sean Kemp did play the whole game. Detlef Schrempf played, and then Shaq and Eddie Jones. Kobe was there, but this was before he was a rookie. So, you know, it was before he was Kobe. Van Exel. But anyway, that was a great night. The Wizards and Nuggets game was not quite as fun as the Lakers and this glory Sonics game. I'll give you that. But I went to that instead of the Monday night game. The Bills played the Colts that night. The score was 9-6. So pretty much all, I think it was all field goals. And it was deemed at the time the worst Monday night game in history. So bad Buffalo Bills games on both sides of us here, Gary. You and
yeah.
me.
Yeah, it really is.
There was no touchdowns and no turnovers in the game, apparently. I'm reading now. Only the second game in NFL history where that's happened.
Oof. And let me because we get paid by the minute here. So let me tack on one more story to this one. In the spirit of that NBA story, the Celtics used to play. I grew up near Hartford. Celtics used to play the Hartford Civic Center once a year. That does not happen anymore. But they hosted the Magic one year in the early 90s. And my friend's father, who is not a sports fan at all, even though his son was a huge sports fan, came back one day and was kind of like, I was out in the Civic Center. I ran into some giant guy who's going to play in the game tonight. And we're like, oh, who was it? He's like, I don't remember, Irish guy. And so my friend and I are sort of like, you know, running through like white dudes on the Celtics and Magic. and then his friend is like, no, a big burly guy, like 7 feet tall. And finally we're like, are you talking about Shaquille O'Neal? And he's like, yeah. It's like, yeah, okay. I don't think he's Irish. But
he really thought he was Irish? I mean, I get why. He must, yeah. If he read his name, I'd see that. But why would you otherwise think he's
I
Irish?
I would guess he said Irish name. When okay. I think back on it, but gave us the impression that it was an Irish fella.
Yeah, that's quite a story. And he met Shaquille. That's that. Don't I hate it when that happens? I would hate as a kid when people got to meet athletes and didn't appreciate it.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, my I have that issue with some of my friends. I don't have any friends in Boise who are football fans. And some of these guys, which is fine, it's I prefer it that way, but some of these guys, they still know what's going on in your world, and they get to hear, because of some of the coaches I get to know, they get to hear some of the best, juiciest gossip you could ever imagine in the NFL, the kind of stuff we'd never say on a podcast. And every time I share, I feel like, God, I just come away pissed off. Like, what a waste. You know how many people would totally appreciate the details of what you just heard? And they just don't, you're surrounded by people who don't appreciate it enough. Non-sports fans suck.
Yeah. You got to get a life. You got to get a life that just involves sitting around watching sports on TV.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I'm watching that Bulls thing here soon.
Oh, yeah.
All this mid-90s NBA talk.
I know.
Last Dance.
maybe that's the series we'll do this summer, just mid-90s NBA talk with Andy and Gary.
Yeah, there you go.
But we're going to have to wrap this one up for now. We will have shows all week. We'll have a Friday morning show. Andy and I will be back for the big post-draft extravaganza starting Monday. I don't know how we're going to split that up. Maybe we'll do a couple of shows next week, sort of assessing the draft. But just so many podcasts coming at you. You won't know what to do with yourself. But that's going to do it for now. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Gary Gramling. A special thanks once again to Andy Benoit. our special guest for joining me on this one. We are produced by Shelby Royston, SI's executive producer of podcasts, is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.